You are listening to Rift Overcast.
Hello, welcome to Rift. Oh, welcome to Echo. Welcome to Rift Overcast. My name is Matt, and with me, as always, is Joe.
Hello. Oh, sorry, trying to stay with the theme of the show.
New Mage Souls getting revealed on Friday. We find out why Joe just couldn't really stick with the Warrior, but he's back at it again. We went Defiant. We'll talk about that. New IA coming, all kinds of stuff. But first, let's do the poll results. So the poll was, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your expectations for Storm Legion? So on a scale of 1 to 10, we got 31 votes, and most people voted for either an 8 or a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. There are 13 votes for 8, and there were 8 for a 10, 3 for 9, 5 said 7, 2 said 6. Nobody voted lower than 6, so expectations for Storm Legion are really high. So I wonder if Tryon really, like, If they know this, you know, if they're aware of how high the expectations are for this expansion. Because, you know, the higher the expectations, the bigger the potential letdown could be also.
Well, that's definitely true. And we've seen that with numerous, you know, game launches. It doesn't necessarily have to pertain just to expansions. But I think they do. We've been talking about it off air for, on and off for months now, and even in the podcast, that I think they really are holding out that, I don't want to say lack of updates, but lack of, you know, class balancing and little intricacies like that over the next couple months that have been the last couple months as well will basically keep people just enough satisfied to stick around, and they're just devoting any minute they have possible into the expansion to, and let's hope it all, you know, pans out and it's worth it.
Well, what are your if you had to rate your expectations for Storm Legion, Joe, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you have voted for?
I would probably just say like a 9, because I'm not quite at a 10. But, and we've talked about so many numerous different topics. I really hope that they pay attention to a lot of more smaller, subtle things. Like, I really don't have that much concern about big things like rating. Like, even if the rating's a little lackluster, like Infernal Dawn, even Infernal Dawn is fantastic, you know. It might be the tiniest bit, like, you know, worse than Hammernail was. But it's still great. I worry more about like the directions of all the souls, little tiny tweaks they do to PvP in general, the leveling experience, IAs, little things like that. I think those sometimes go like untouched. Not necessarily untouched, but you know, game developers try to focus on all the big points, like, you know, war fronts and, you know, now conquest, and because they figure that's what the biggest appeal comes from, and then little things get like, you know, overlooked. And I really hope that doesn't happen.
You know, it is true that the little things do very quickly get overlooked, and I don't think that it's so much as they're not paying attention to the little things. I mean, when you have a relatively small development team, which I believe Tryon has, we don't know what the actual size of their development team is, but I'm sure that their resources for just sheer manpower, you know, for doing fixes and developing classes and whatnot is probably relatively limited, at least compared to, like, say, like Star Wars The Old Republic, which had such a massive development team that they had to start laying people off, you know what I mean? Tryon is nowhere near that big of a development team. And I think that they have to make choices, you know what I mean, on what's more important to focus on.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I definitely don't. You expect them to address every single issue. I almost wish that, like, the things that don't get addressed, they tell straight out of the gate. Like, when someone comes out, like, this, and this, you know, we couldn't fit in the expansion, but it is, like, you know, our number one priority going forward. Because anything like that, you know, I might be a little disappointed, like, oh, it's not in the expansion yet, but at least I know it's coming, like, you know, I feel satisfied. The unknown is what kills everything at most. When people keep asking questions on the forums, they either, you know, give a non-answer, like, we're not talking about that right now, or they just don't answer at all, is what pisses people off. And to answer what Kelly's saying in the chat, I really hope they do this, which is to say they make the world feel awesome and, like, more alive. People have actually been bringing up on the forums very recently that they're a little concerned with how big you know, the scope of the world is going to be come the expansion. And granted, there's, you know, three or four, like, majorly packed servers, but more dead servers are going to feel even more dead with how massive the scope of the game is. So I think it's almost inevitable you're going to have to server merge unless they get a ridiculous influx of players. And that's definitely possible, but we have no idea how. I mean, what's a ridiculous influx? Over 100,000, you know? Like, what if they get, like, 20,000 new subs? Like, that's a substantial increase, but that might not be enough to, you know, fill out this ridiculous size continent and world they're going
to
make.
Well, you have to consider, like, what do you think the maximum population is on a single server right now?
They always say average MMOs are around 10,000, but though they're saying that theirs are, you know, bigger than, and all MMOs now have been generally going that direction toward it too, where they're bigger, so it might be closer to 20, maybe even 30. But, you know, that's always so, like, you can't really say, like, oh, it's 20,000 people, because at a given time, even at peak times, what do you have at max, like 800-900 people on, you know?
Yeah, so I brought it up, and I asked that question because I'm thinking about how many subs would they have to get to bring all of the servers up to an average, you know, population during, like, peak time and stuff of medium, like, all of them up to medium. And if each server is, okay, Kel in chat is saying that he heard the new super servers are going to be 25,000. So if each server can host a maximum of 25,000, 25,000 would be very high, or full, I think is the label, would be very high. We're not looking for full. We're looking for at least medium, right? Which means that you're expecting maybe 10,000 to 15,000 people somewhere right in there. How many would you say is probably maybe on, like, a server, like, right now, like maybe 5,000?
I don't even think there's that many on, to be honest. Like, if, I mean, you have to think that the majority of the people that are on are probably in Meridian and Sanctum, and I would say there's, I don't know, a few hundred in the city, like at, like, peak wait time, like prior to a raid.
Well, the estimated sub numbers has been, a popular number has been 250,000. We have 12 servers, right?
I think we have, I thought it was 16.
Oh, it's 16? Okay, so
yeah,
250,000 divided by 16 is 15,625. So this, if it was spread perfectly, you know, perfectly even, then there would be 15,000, roughly 15,000 subscribed players on each server right now. So you're looking at them having to go up something close to 200,000 subs plus to really be able to fill out the servers.
Well, yeah, I think the other thing, though, is it's not even so much that they have lack of players to fill out the servers. They have a lack of people who are on constantly, because there's probably a tremendous amount of people that are casual players, so they're only on for a couple hours a day. So they pretty much are never accounted into, like, who's on at peak times. And that's why the servers feel a little more dead than they do.
You think that they should show us, like, a low, medium, high, full, like, icon or little, or, you know, or measurement on the server listing for how many players are actually on it, like how many accounts have characters on that server, not just the how many people are logged in currently?
I've always thought games should do that, to be honest, because you can, like, look at it one time, you're like, oh wow, it's high right now, but then it's like Sunday at 8 p.m. which is, like, notoriously the most peak time ever on any MMO you're on, and then they sound the next day Monday at like 5 p.m. and it's like low. Like, that's so, you know, deceiving. You have no idea what the actual, you know, normal peak times, how big the, you know, how many people are going to be on. You don't even know, like, the one server could have more players than the other one, but one could be more casuals on. The other one could be a big raiding community. So it's completely skewed by so many different contexts and factors.
I mean, I hope that Storm Legion can pull 200,000 subs in. That would be amazing. That would be awesome. I mean, if we're actually sitting at 250, 300,000 subs, that would bring us up to roughly 500,000 active subscribers. That's a really good spot for an MMO to sit on. It could even bring more than that. I mean, Rift Classic sold over 1 million copies in its first 2 or 3 months. I'm not sure exactly what the window was there they sold.
I think it was like almost exactly like that. It was like 2 months. Well, I mean, like, I think that it's going to have a big influx, but, like, people have been talking about this a lot lately, not necessarily in the official forums, but on the, like, Reddit and MMO Champion. People that have joined the last few months because of, you know, either Rift Light attracted them or friends told them. They ask, like, you know, why didn't this game be so successful at the very beginning? And I almost always think about the same thing. I think at the very, very beginning, at launch, the game wasn't like... The game has become how good it is now, not because of how good it was at launch, because of the patches since then. So at launch, especially if you were someone who's coming from WoW and you have friends over in WoW luring you to go back, and you come into Rift at launch, you're like, this game's good, but it's not yet, like, you know, something new or bringing anything that new to the table. So, and like everyone knows, MMOs in this day and age literally get one chance. If you don't succeed at launch, people pretty much never come back. Though I do expect a huge influx with the expansion, but I don't think that's going to be old players used to play. I think that's going to be entirely untapped, you know, market that is going to pick up the game for the first time.
I don't know. I think a lot of old players left to, I think those that left to go back to World of Warcraft might end up staying there, because it's World of Warcraft. It's one of those games that has just such a massive subscriber number that there's just so many players there, and, you know, and if you're playing World of Warcraft, there's probably so many of your friends that are there as well, and so you have to get everybody to leave, you know, all at the same time, or it's not worth it to the individual player to leave, because that's where their friends are. So that's what I think really holds people to WoW. But then at the same time, there's a lot of mixed feelings about WoW's expansion coming out. So players who left Rift to go back to WoW might be thinking, well, it's between, you know, Guild Wars 2, Mists of Pandaria, or Rift Storm Legion. And if you don't like Guild Wars 2, Storm Legion is really your only other option to go to. So I think we could see a good amount of returning players. I think we're going to see a good amount of returning players. I agree with Chatroom. I think 200,000 is definitely doable. I think that they could even break that. And they've shown, you know, something that you don't get on an MMO launch is you don't get to meet the company. You know, you don't get to learn how the company is, how good they are at patching stuff and balancing things and releasing content updates. And that's a bonus, you know, for Rift to pull people back in with this expansion, is that we know who Tryon is now. We know that they're awesome. We know that they're pumping out content every 3 months, you know what I mean? You can look back at their history and judge for yourself, and you have a rough idea of what to expect from this expansion, and people might feel more worth it to invest in the retail costs to get involved in that.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say before, and I forgot, I think the one thing that will be extremely compelling, though, especially people who are either, like you said, they don't want to play MoP, you know, or Mists of Pandaria, whatever you want to call it, and they're not that interested in Guild Wars. I love calling it that. It's the best acronym ever. The one thing that could be extremely compelling that they couldn't get their friends to leave, you know, say a few months ago, is that Storm Legion will essentially be like, you know, a slate cleaner. So there's no, like, catching up to current content. It's like, guys, if we want to go to Rift, like, this is the perfect opportunity, because it'll be like when the game first came out, your slate's wiped clean, you start fresh, you don't have to worry about, like, catching up to anyone. I still think, though, like I said before, that the biggest influx of players will be brand new players. I don't know how much returning players, but that's not to say that it's going to have a lack of influx. There's probably so many people who have never tried the game at all that it's still, you know, a ridiculous amount of people to tap from.
You really think that the MMO market is that big and that spread out that Rift could see the majority of new players? I think it's going to be a lot of MMO veterans and people who have tried Rift or heard of Rift before and know what it is and know how it is, and, you know, I've seen the content updates and decide, well, I can start over. So I think that there's going to be a lot of returning players and stuff. I don't know if the MMO population in general is really spread that thinly between the titles.
I don't think that it's spread that thinly, but you have to realize that WoW's sub numbers are so, you know, it's like hard to look at them, because people say, oh, like 10 million subs, but like 4 million of those are from Asia. They probably have another million in Europe. So really, you're looking at closer to 4 or 5 million there in, the, you know, North America. And I think there's so many people that they're not new to MMOs. I just meant new players to Rift, you know, period. I think there's so many people, and you see it throughout the threads, and, you know, we see it on Ion all the time, that do not want to play WoW. Like, they've played Ion, they've played like EverQuest and games like that, and they just do not even want to get near WoW. And that's a huge market to tap into. And they're going to say, you know, finally, I missed my chance last time. I'm going to go to Rift because there's nothing else out right now. I don't like Guild Wars, or that could be the case. So they're going to go right to Rift because there's really no alternative right now.
Vindicit chat brings up a really good point as well. I remember when Rift first came out, their ad campaign was insane. I mean, they were buying out Blizzard on Wowhead.com. You were seeing Rift ads. They were absolutely everywhere. I haven't seen any marketing for Storm Legion yet, and that's definitely a necessity. Like Vindicit says in chat, no MMO will have many subs if they don't pump out those commercials. You know, it's true. You have to get that out there, and you have to do it relatively early. I mean, they've made the announcement, right? And we've talked before in previous episodes that we feel like the announcement maybe should have waited a little bit longer to announce it.
Yeah.
But it's been done now. So now that it has been announced, it's time to start advertising it.
Well, I think that they think very similar to how launch was. They kind of have one shot with this. If they start, you know, advertising now, people might pick up the game now, and the game's not going to have, you know, like, it's not going to have the same viewpoint, or so many things are going to be changed, like possibly completely drastically and dramatically in the expansion. So someone could like something now, dislike it in the expansion, and vice versa. So they're waiting till, like Kel said, so, you know, maybe a month, 2 months. Hell, they might just wait till they at least release the release date. Maybe in the latter half of this month or early September, they're like, oh, it comes out November 12th or something like that. And as soon as that comes out, they just start rolling out the commercials to hype up sales, just like you would for a brand new MMO release, not necessarily just an expansion.
You think maybe, and we're gonna get to a little bit of discussion about patch 1.10, probably more towards the end of the episode, if we have time for it. But do you think that maybe that's why 1.10 is looking a little bit thin? At least what we know about it is looking a little thin. Is maybe Tryon is just kind of like, you know, they know that a lot of players that know about Storm Legion are going to wait for the expansion, so it's not really a lot of sense in putting anything other than just quality of life stuff that will last through to the expansion into the game, you know what I mean? Like the instant adventures. Like anything that's not going to last into Storm Legion really isn't worth developing on right now.
Oh, no, yeah. We've been saying this off air for a while. They're really not going to do anything extremely radical, you know, and dramatic to change things. They're going to do little tweaks like Instant Adventure. I don't even think they want to touch PvP right now, even though there's so much, or Conquest. I think they're not even going to touch Conquest until the expansion or extremely close to it, even though there's thread after thread after thread on the forums about how much they hate the current model of it. I just think that they think there's no point, and even if they thought that there was a little, you know, point to it, let's just continue focusing on the expansion, make it as good as possible, and we can worry about that later, because I think, like I said, I think they're hoping everyone stays around. They are satisfied just enough to stick around for a couple more months. They know the expansion's coming, so they won't be like, oh, I'm going to leave, because they know something big's coming, so they'll stick around. And then when the expansion comes out, that's what I said a while ago. I really think that this might be a make or break a thing with Rift. If they, you know, get a huge influx of players, and a month or later, they'll drop out, they might be in trouble. But if they hold on and retain those players, you know, might be permanently, not permanently, but for a long haul, have a good, I don't know, 500,000 subs for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're really putting all of their eggs in one basket here, and we've said it before, but expectations are really high, so as it stands right now, it looks like the community, the Rift community, and the players, at least the ones that voted on our poll, really think that Storm Legion can be this amazing expansion that we're expecting it to be. So Tryon has a lot to live up to. I mean, when you set the bar high, you can also set yourself up for a lot of disappointment. But I don't think that Storm Legion is going to bomb or anything by any means. Like we've said, you brought it up in previous episodes. It's definitely not going to bomb. The question is how big will it actually get, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't anticipate any sort of bombing. I was just saying, like, you know, in a what-if scenario or playing devil's advocate. But I still do think that it's a make it or break. I think even if they, you know, I mean, they can almost find a middle ground where they don't really necessarily attract many new players, but they kind of stay where they are. Or if they do attract new players, it's a small bunch. I don't know how much longevity game will have that doing that either, because eventually, you know, even the veteran players will start, you know, hemorrhaging and leaving. But who knows? You have to wait and see. I'm really curious how many people this game is going to attract. I really hope it does attract a lot, because a lot of people do not want to go to certain MMOs, whether it's Rift or any game for that matter, simply because it's lack of, you know, people in it, which is really stupid, quite frankly, because if your server is filled, who cares how many are on other servers?
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of servers, we didn't move servers yet, but we switched factions. We are on Defiant side now.
Yeah, we went to the dark side. We're just bastards, like.
I'm going to have to make new avatars now. So now, Joe is a Bami warrior, and I'm an F mage. I'm playing my old mage that this is the mage that I did 7 out of 11 HK on back in October-ish. October 2011 and November 2011. It was something like that, because I left my old HK guild last year at the end of 2011, roughly, I think, 1 month before Star Wars came out, because you had convinced me to go to Star Wars, which was the worst thing you ever could have done to me. I don't know what kind of friend you are.
Wait, what are you talking about? You made me go to Star Wars.
Yeah, don't start this.
Nothing to start. Conversation's over.
So what brought you back to the Warrior, Joe? What compelled you to change? Because this was essentially your decision, and I was perfectly okay with it because I was getting kind of disappointed with the cleric, and I really did miss playing the mage, so I was very happy with the move. But this was initially your decision.
Just answer Cal. They're still on Greybriar, Cal. We didn't move servers. We just... I had an old warrior from, like... When we originally played Rift, like, you know, at launch, at least for me, it was me, Matt, and our friend Jess, and we started... we had a cleric, right, Matt? Yeah. You had a cleric, and I had a female human warrior, because at the time I couldn't stand what any other male character looked like, so I was forced to play female, which I regret, because I hate playing female characters. But anyway, we got to, like, the mid-40s, and then our friend just started playing, and she, like, just... almost the exact same scenario with she did in Ion with us. She made us reroll because she couldn't stand she wanted to be like, you know, the bad guy, essentially the horde equivalent of this game. So we rerolled. I got a bombing war to like 44, 45, and I got burnt and quit. So when I came back, you know, shortly after tour, it was literally like finish something in the war, play the Defiant, or start over, and I actually chose the rogue because I didn't think the warrior changed that drastically, even though I eventually would level a human warrior. But anyway, my main thing was a big multitude of reasons. Number one, I really want a bomb meat guy. As much as I like dwarf, I was getting really sick and tired of playing a small character, and Matt can attest to that. In virtually every game we play, I try to play the biggest, hugest motherfucker possible.
Your Templar in Ion was just toweringly huge. It was insane.
Yeah, it was just, I love it. Like, I love dwarves, but I think I'm more like, you know, if I have an altar, they're a dwarf, basically. Like, they're, like, the second best thing to me. 2001, number two, our guild. They're a good guild. They're a quality guild. I'm not going to, you know, insult them, El Mala and Greybriar, but quite frankly, they recruited to a ridiculous extent. And one day, I signed on and wasn't getting invited to the raids anymore. Though, you know, out of the first maybe, I think I did a total of, like, 7 raids with them, and I'd say there was a potential...
Yeah, you got into quite a few.
Yeah, I'd say there was a potential 9 or 10 of them that I could have gotten in, but I got the 7-1, I just wasn't there. So only 2 I actually missed out on. One was the very first night we were there, so I didn't anticipate to get raided, or to be in the raid, rather. And the other one was very recently, when Matt was trying to get in. And then, again, very literally like last week, they stopped inviting me. I realized they recruited, like, 2 other rogues, both of which had... Even though I have good gear, my weapons are abysmal in my rogue. Both of which either had the rank 50 gun or some other ridiculous, like, hammer nail relic, to which I cannot compete. Because I still have that dreadful tier 1 relic weapon from Greenskill himself. So it was that. It was wannabe a bomby. And as long as I play any MMO, as much as I enjoy DPSing, especially on, like, a ranger slash hunter type character, I always want to tank eventually. And that's pretty much what happened. Even though I've played the warrior, I figured the bomby would rejuvenate a little bit, make the warrior a little more enjoyable, and I am banking on tremendous changes in Storm Legion, which is why my expectations are pretty high. They're almost solely based on that. I hope that something drastic happens with the warrior taking souls, not only to make more viable, but to make them more enjoyable as a whole. So we'll see what happens with all that.
But you're playing DPS right now because you don't really have any tank gear yet. What are you running for DPS souls?
Well, first I was playing the BM champion, like the 40 BM 26 champion, though that's not really all that. Like, when you don't have a crystal and your gear is pretty crappy. So I'm messing around with some 51 champion builds now. I was literally just doing them on the dummies earlier, so I'll probably do that until I have better gear. But, you know, the DPS is just, you know, means to an end. I'm pretty much just doing it to get into tier 1 raids and possibly master modes just to get tank gear, and then, you know, I'll start tanking them, like, pretty soon.
You think that they're going to ever give us, like, a better height slider? Because I know that you would, like, love it to be just a little bit taller. I mean, Bonnie are pretty big, right? And I think that Rift's character customization, let's talk about the character customization just a little bit, because it's one of the areas of Rift that I think that they could really, it would really be nice if they advanced on it, and it's not bad. It's better than not bad. It's actually
it's
excellent.
Good. I would say it's solid. I think excellent's a little, I don't know, I wouldn't call it excellent. I'd say it's solid. It, you know, you don't necessarily need anything to make it, like, amazing, but I think it's very solid. And I think when we say it's excellent, though, I think that's because we're basing it on what most MMOs have, which is unfair, because I think most MMOs have shitty character customization. So if you're saying it's excellent simply because it has dramatically better than other MMOs, then I'm always going to be biased on that, because I think almost all MMOs have terrible character creation.
Well, I think it's excellent, because basically, when it comes to character creation, I look at Ion being, like, the top of the list, you know what I mean? Where, like, anything, or you can argue Guild Wars 2 or whatever. You, me, and Kella had a whole thing about Ion character customization versus Guild Wars 2. Not even getting into that, but like Kel said in chat, Ion / Guild Wars 2, to be fair, okay?
Yeah.
So that's basically the absolute top tier. And then the bottom would be, like, Alods or, like, World of Warcraft.
Yeah. You know, actually, now that I think about it, I think Alods was actually worse than WoW, was it? I can't remember, like, completely.
I take it back. As bad of a game as Alods was, Alods was actually better than WoW, because it had, like, height sliders. It had a couple of sliders, like height sliders and stuff on it.
Oh, okay.
But, They definitely have room to expand. Like, you and me were talking yesterday, because you were saying, like, you know, you were talking about the size of your Bami, and we joked when you hit the Fury of the Ascended and grew to be, like, five times your size, that how awesome it would be to just be that size, like, 100% of the time. But it would be kind of nice if they maybe could just give us a little bit more freedom at all. I feel like Bami could be a little bit bigger, because one of the areas of Rift that a lot of players feel Rift kind of lacks a little bit with is the races, you know, and the races look great. The model quality is awesome. The customization is awesome. But when you really look at it, you basically have, like, a dark elf, a high elf, a white human, and a tan human, and then you have, like, a big human. Like, that's it. Like, that's what the Bami really are. Is they're, like, big humans, you know what I mean? They're cool. I like the way they look, but they're, like, big humans.
Yeah, and people have been talking about recently, not like to a tremendous extent, but I've seen a couple threads here and there about, not even necessarily height slider, they want some sort of, like, weight slider, because, like, unless you're a Bami, you can't even be, like, muscular. Like, humans look, like, very, you know, humans look like, in general, both Mathosians and Eth, rather, they look lean and, like, fit somewhat, but they're still kind of scrawny. And elves are, like, the scrawniest thing in the world. I don't care how tall they are. They're like a stick. So if you could add, like, any weight to them, it'd be nice.
They're like a string bean. I love the customization options for, like, the Kalari, the male Kalari especially. I think they look awesome, and I think they look great. I know you have your opinions, too, about it. But they look great in so much of the gear. I just don't like how skinny they are. They're like, tall and lanky.
Well, that and how they run.
Yeah, they do run a little bit funky. It's a little odd. I wonder if we're going to see any depth.
Yeah, I really hope that little things... I mean, that just goes back to what I said before about little things. I don't expect them to, like, completely dramatically fix the animation or the character creation, because number one, doesn't even need anything dramatic. If they had a weight slider, I'd probably be, you know, like, I would never ask for anything else except for maybe, like, new hairstyles, but that's, you know, very minor things.
Could you imagine a dwarf with a weight slider, by the way?
Well,
I mean, dwarves
the current
are already
weight
pretty
they have
chunky,
now,
so could you imagine making them fatter?
And I was about to say, like, if they had a weight slider, what they currently are would be maxed. That'd be, like, all the way to the right. You could just make them thinner. That's about it. But, yeah,
a thin
like
dwarf
I said.
Would look almost even worse.
Well, they'd be, like, a minimum, too. You can't make them, like, thin. They'd have to be, like, a little chubby at the very least. But all I was going to say was, I want little things like animations to be changed. And it's funny, because some classes, or some races, I should say, their running animations, their cast animations, they have a couple ones here and there that are good. I don't think any race, with the exception of maybe the elves, because I think the race, the elves running and cast animations, maybe, except for maybe one, are absolutely abysmal. Especially since they walk as if there's a broom in their ass. It's so odd.
Oh my god!
And when they cast, especially as a cleric, when you heal, they pretty much kneel over and paddle, like as if they like drop their paddle and they're on a boat and they have to use their hand. It's retarded.
Yeah, as per the episode 3 discussion, high elf flatulence.
Exactly.
Like they're
so
waving up far away.
I really hope that they fix them and then some other things. Like, I think most of the races will have, you know, what would you say, there's about two main animations you see most of the time, and every once in a while you'll see, you know, one or two other ones that are unique to an ability. But of those, like,
you know,
main two, I'd say one for pretty much every race is always good, and there's a second one that's kind of subpar.
It's hard to count them, honestly. I've gotten so used to Rift animations. I did feel a little bit disconnected from my character when I first started playing Rift back in the day, like, way back in the day, you know, and we're talking when I first came out in March 2011, but they've grown on me. I really enjoy the animations now. I've gotten used to them, and I've really kind of settled in. The only ones that I'm not really a fan of is you know, the male elves is about the only one. So, but I can't even really count them. There's quite a few, actually, you know, and a couple of skills for a couple of the different souls do have, like, unique animations, such as, like, Cornered Beast is the only one with that animation. Those animations are really cool. And the different races even have a different animation each for Cornered Beast.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, though, especially when you're a caster, I would say you see two things, like, 80% of the time, and then you see another 2 to 3, I would say, animations periodically.
It would definitely set the game apart. Like, you're talking about the little things, and I think that's one of the little things that sets a lot of games apart. Like, the more Korean-oriented ones, such as Terra and Ion, what sets them apart is the animations. Look, they look quick, and they look responsive, and some of them look, like, really violent and intense, you know what I mean?
They look really natural,
and
too.
Different. Yeah, they do. And that really helps with immersion. It really helps you feel a connection to your character, and I get that with some of my characters. Not as much with others. I've said before, I think we've talked about animations before on the long time ago on the show. I think that the animation quality is excellent. Like, Trion's just, they've done a really, really awesome job with the engine, and I really like how smooth all the animations are. It's just that their choice for movement is a little bit odd for some of them, and that's about it.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the Asian MMOs, they generally focus more on the character, and that's why I look better, and then they sacrifice content. So it's hard, you know, I can't sit here and say, like, oh, man, I can't play the game because animations are not that bad, number one. Number two, you know, like you said earlier, you have to make a choice, even when you're making a game, not necessarily with an expansion. They chose to, you know, put, like, I would say, average, maybe slightly below average animations in the game, and then instead they just flood the game with content and other things to do instead. So, but you know, when you're staring at your character all day long, animations play a big part. I almost feel like some developers, like, underplay how important they are, because you are staring at one thing for God knows how long at a time. So when you see the same cast, like, 50 times in, you know, a span of 20 minutes, and it looks goofy, that's going to kill your entire, you know, gameplay.
Yeah, Definitely has a big impact, but I mean, I would not by any means sacrifice Trion's amazing content and content release schedule just so that I can play a high elf that I feel like has a better animation. I would much rather have the animations that we have now if it meant that I had to sacrifice their effort on any other area of the game, because they do such an awesome job with the rest of it.
Well, I would delete Conquest for better animations. I mean, what?
Yeah, well, okay, I might exchange Conquest for some animations. That's fair. So let's talk about the Mage Soul is going to get revealed this Friday, August 10th, and they changed the stream time, right? You put here to 2:30 p.m.?
Yeah, 2:30 p.m. Pacific, so 5:30 for us. It was originally going to be 3:30/6:30. They bumped it up 1 hour, which I'm actually surprised they did that. If anything, they usually postpone stuff, you know, or reschedule.
Why do you think they pushed it back an hour like that?
I don't know, honestly. Yeah, maybe they anticipate it to be longer now, so they want to do it, you know. Or maybe, just maybe, Trion finally got a brain, sorry, but the one thing they are so stupid on, and I'm going to give credit to Kel,
he
always nails it on the head, is they always put their live streams, like, at the most peak time for raids. So everyone's like, live stream or raid and watch the live stream later, because you can just watch it on their Twitch page. I'm raiding.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do also get it onto YouTube as well, and a lot of the views, I think, happen on YouTube. A majority of the views happen on YouTube anyways. You know, we've seen it with the show and stuff. We love you guys, everybody that's listening. You guys have been awesome. The podcast gets great hits. The Twitch channel doesn't see quite as much, especially when we get more during the live shows normally, but we don't see very much usually when we're just kind of like streaming, doing dungeons and such. You know, Rift doesn't really see as a lot of attention on Twitch, because I think Twitch is very, very big on Diablo 3, and especially the prime esports, which are StarCraft 2 and League of Legends.
League of Legends, yeah.
And it's really hard. A lot of the viewers that have registered accounts or people that even know about Twitch TV go to Twitch TV for those games. So it's, you know, it's not likely, I guess, you know, that what I'm trying to say, that they would kind of browse other stuff. You know, they're there for the esports. So it can be difficult to get viewers, but I mean, they've had a really great turnout every time that they've done the live streams. I do agree that if they found a time that they could do the live stream that didn't conflict with typical raid times, they would get a lot more than that. But 2:30 p.m., that's like really early. I mean, that's on a Friday too. It's not on a Saturday. So, I mean, a lot of people are going to be at work. So that's why I think that 1 hour change there, I wonder, you know, why they really did that. Although it would get the more Eastern viewers.
Well, that plus, even if you had it at 6:30, that would still be 3:30 Pacific. So who's going to be home at 3:30 that's not going to be home at 2:30 that has a full-time job? The only thing that would really affect is maybe like a kid in school who just got out of school. That's about it.
Yeah. So they'll probably give us a quick rundown over it. I don't think we should expect I'm not expecting too much because we know that a lot of Storm Legion is still in development. And the New Souls is probably the biggest project because this has got to just be driving Trion crazy. I mean, I'm sure that they are having a blast with these new concepts that they have lined up for the new calling or for the callings, the New Souls for the callings. But they've got to balance everything. You know what I mean? And with all the different mixed feedback that they've gotten over the year and recently, especially with, you know, going up to rank 50 and Conquest being out, PvP balancing is such, it's like a taboo topic, you know? It's just, it's such a hot topic, and it's just so controversial with the community that I think that they're really going to focus on this. So they're probably going to, you know, refrain from showing us too much. It's going to be kind of like maybe a few key abilities and give us, you know, what role it's going to be or what roles it can fill. Maybe, if it's like a Rift Stalker or something, then they probably tell us, like, you know, there's DPS passives and there's tank passives or something like that. But I don't think we're going to get to see, like, the entire arsenal of it.
Yeah, and to answer Kelsey, yeah, I have no idea if they're even going to show, you know, like, someone actually playing, or they're just going to be like you said, they're going to say what the role is, if it's a tank, it's a DPS, they'll say what the general theme of it is, you know, like you said, if it's a Rift Stalker, they'll say, oh, there's teleporting in it, or if it's like an illusion type thing, like when they do the Rogue reveal, they'll be like, yeah, it's all based on illusions, and I think they might, if they do show stuff on camera, they'll probably show, like, you know, a few, maybe a handful of, like, abilities, and then, like, that's it. They're not going to go and, because first of all, these things are probably still in development. So it's not even like they're probably finished. So I doubt they can even, you know, do that even if they wanted to, like, do a full display of everything.
So a lot of users have noticed this, and Rip Junkies caught on to this as well and did an article about it that took some quotes off the forums and such. There's a screenshot of a mage in front of a giant, like, defiant-looking type mechanical robot type deal. Of Storm Legion, and he's holding a two-handed beam sword. And yes, I told you we were going to get beam swords. Get beam swords without playing Star Wars.
I've seen this picture. It's still not a lightsaber. I'm sorry. It's just
pretty
not.
Damn close. It's pretty damn close. And
all right, fine. It's like going to like the dollar store and getting like one of those cheap things that light up rather than an actual lightsaber. But you know, it's close.
It's close. It's kind of like a Fisher-Price lightsaber, I guess. That. Is that fair enough? Call it Fisher-Price?
Yeah, Fisher-Price. That's good.
Well, anyway, so he's holding a two-handed. This is the point. And with the when they announced the mage reveal on Friday, the image that they have on the developer blog shows a silhouette of the mage, and it's an Athromythosian. It's a human mage, and he's holding a two-handed sword in a rested position. So he's got the blade of the sword. He's holding the blade of the sword with his left hand. He's got the hilt. With a handle in his right hand. So this is definitely going to be like a two-handed mage spec. This is going to be weird. What is it?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was ranged, too, to be honest. Or at least like it had some range capabilities. You know, like you can be melee, but it had some range capabilities. And, you know, you said off air you think it's going to be a tank. I thought all along the mages were going to get a tank. I didn't think it was going to be a two-handed tank. That was definitely, you know, from left field. But I definitely thought it was going to be a tank.
I'm convinced it's going to be a tank. Like, I know. I'm going to go ahead and say now, because we're recording 2 days prior to the mage reveal, I'm calling it right now. It is a tank. It is. And here's why. Not only because it would be a role that the mage can't do yet, but the mage is also the only calling in the game that doesn't have a tank soul, which that by itself is just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of unfair. I mean, in any other game where you're kind of pigeonholed into playing a specific role when you choose your class, that's different. But in Rift, you're supposed to have that versatility. And, you know, the Chloromancer and then the Cleric Souls, those are only two callings that can heal. So that's half the callings. That's okay, there's two that can't heal. That's not that bad. But three of them can tank, you know what I mean? The mage is the only one that can't tank.
Yeah, but you could think of the same thing. Like, warrior is the only one that doesn't have support, like, at all. Doesn't have anything besides a DPS or a tank. And that's what Kel said about it being based on, like, parry and magical shields. I pretty much think it's going to be... I don't think it's going to be, like, dead on to a death knight, but it's going to be very focused. It's high dot. I don't know about high dots, but it's definitely going to be high parry, and there's definitely going to be, like, magical shields you put on yourself.
Oh, man. I'll tell you. Okay. If you're listening to this episode, you don't, just so you understand like what I'm getting at, Perry is just across the board the worst tanking stat in the game right now.
In like every game. So not worth it. Let's be honest. But that's what's so funny. Like every game does that, and it always boggles my mind, like why they do that. You would think like one game would be out of the norm, like, oh, dodge is terrible. But every game's like parry, oh yeah, that's shitty, who cares? It's very odd, to say the least. I wish they would make parry better. It'd be cool if I had, like, I mean, at the current time, you don't even worry about parry. It's like, oh, yeah, it's there. Who cares? I wish that there was, I don't care how, you know, if there was a good another stat for me to monitor and have to worry about being capped on it, that just makes my, you know, enjoyment more. Why would you limit me on that? You know, it just seems so dumb to me.
Well, you know, Tryon invented Deflect for the Rift Stalker, so which essentially acts as, allows the Rift Stalker to be able to block, right? Because, you know, Riftstalker is the rogue tanking soul, and they can't use a shield. They do a wield daggers, even if they're tanking. And they really needed that block mechanic. So they invented this entire stat that is functional only for one specific soul, and only when that soul is in a specific stance. You know what I mean? So they attached a stat attribute to a soul's ability. They could do the same thing for the mage, because they're definitely, if it's going to be parry-oriented, if it's going to be, you know, completely reliant on parry for their avoidance or their mitigation, then they're going to have to improve parry somehow, but you don't want to do the board, because then you'll make it better for everybody else as well.
I just think they're going to make, I think their magical shield is basically going to be the, like, you know, the standalone stat, and that's going to be like essentially work like block. It might have like a little bit of intricacies to it, but I think they will increase parry across the board, because they might have to, or they'll just give like them and their talent tree a ridiculous base parry, so that way, you know, when they get more, or they basically just have a better translate ratio of parry into rating than anyone else does. I mean, I think that, and they did the same thing with Death Knights. Death Knights had ridiculously high parry ratios compared to other tanks. And it's the same thing for Druid at one point. They had higher dodge ratios, etc. It's easy to do.
I think the Mage is going to be an endurance tank. I think it's going to be like a pure endurance tank. I think when other tanks, like using the current game scaling, I think when other tanks are sitting at 23,000 health, the Mage tank is going to sit at 30,000 health and use almost exclusively spell shields. I think they're going to be high armor and high passive talent mitigation, and probably very low avoidance, just so that way they have a very large health pool that lasts a long time.
Well, two things. Number one, I don't think they're going to be a endurance tank. I think they're going to be like very similar to Death Knight. They're higher avoidance. You're going to be like I don't think any game is going to do this anymore. I think every game tries to keep niches, especially with tanks and healers. You know, they try to keep niches to an extent, but they don't want to make them. I mean, WoW made that mistake. Like in Burning Crusade, rather, where they had like every tank had its own niche, but it was like too extreme in each direction, so they had to homogenize. I'm not saying you have to homogenize nearly to the extent they did, but you do have to do someone. I think that's what's going to happen. Like every tank's going to be pretty close to one another in general stats, but there's going to be like one thing in general that probably sets them apart. For this, I don't think they're going to be a third thing. I think they're going to be similar to a DK. They're going to have high parry, and they might not even dodge for all we know. They're not going to block, so the magic shield will be their block equivalent, and they might just have an insane amount of shields to just absorb. If you coupled that with high health too, like, why would you roll any other tank?
Well, I mean, that's what the prime stats are for tanks anyways, right? It's high health and mitigation. I mean, the avoidance thing, that's like a bonus for tanks. I mean, the prime stats are always just like block, you know, flat mitigation basically, and endurance. Those are king.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, they did the same thing for rogues. Like, they don't have a shield, so they gave them deflect, and then they have dodge, and they have parry like everyone else, and that, you know, and they have basically the same health as anyone else. So why would they change anything for the mage? I mean, they can do the same thing.
I don't know. I mean, if their avoidance is low, then they're going to be taking pretty consistent damage. If their avoidance is like really low, you know what I mean, and their dodge and parry is really low, then it'll be consistent damage. It's just that, and that's going to mean that they're going to need a higher health pool to sustain it. Plus, I'm thinking about the mechanic of the shielding, too, you know what I mean, for the mage, and I'm thinking that you're not going to want to base it off of spell power, because they're going to have to create a whole new armor set for the mage if they want to do a tank mage, you know, because you're going to need cloth with toughness on it, and you're going to need cloth with tank stats on it, and, you know, mitigation or dodge, parry, and whatever. And so I think that their spell power is going to be extremely low, which means that, you know, their shields can't scale off the spell power. It's not going to work right. If they do use shielding and it's going to be their primary source of mitigation, then it would be better if it's scaled off of their endurance or scaled off of their health pool, which means that they're going to need a very high health pool.
Well, they could just do a percentage of your spell power, like 20% or something. Or, you know, something low like that so it doesn't get out of hand. But every tank goes to that where they have low... I still think they're going to have dodge and parry. Their dodge might be like the equivalent to like other tanks' parry, where it's kind of low. And then their shields would be like blocked for anyone else. When it's low, you get hit hard. When it gets moderate, you're good. And then their parry will always be high. That'd be like their one constant. Just like rogues generally have high dodge, and then you have to work to get your deflect up and other stats. And then like the warriors generally have high block because of high strength. I don't think any game is going to think anything dramatic. I think, you know, as much as you want to say every tank has its own, most of the tanks are pretty homogenized. They have three stats that all work, like two avoidance ones and one mitigation stat. The only difference is, like, what weapons they equip and what armor they have on. But they pretty much made them all homogenized where they all work the same way. So I don't expect anything radical, not even just in Rift, but in games in general, because they realize, especially with tanking, it's really hard to balance things when you have all the tanks have, like, their own niche, and it's to an extreme extent. They try to keep them very centered and close to one another, or else, like, you have constant imbalancing that is just a huge pain in the ass to monitor.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely true. And Kel says in chat that they wouldn't need toughness if it works off of magical shields. I think they will use ablatives. By ablatives, I'm guessing you're meaning, like, you know, relying entirely on, like, 100% absorb shields that just basically chip away over time. But, and if that's the case, then you have to realize that mitigation and avoidance and all that, that's applied before the shield takes damage. That's why a purifier shield or a Justicar shield that absorbs 760 damage can last for 3,000 damage worth. It's because when you put it on a tank, their mitigation is applied before the shield takes the damage, so the shield lasts longer. And if the mage uses shields, then it's going to be the same concept, you know. Either the shield is going to have a ridiculously high maximum absorb. If it's going to be a 100% absorb shield, like something like 5,000 absorb, or they're going to have mitigation. The high mitigation or high endurance or something to apply before, you know what I mean? Which, if you don't have toughness, you're taking, you know, 200% damage on critical hits. That's going to chip away the shield really, really quick if it's not like a really high damage shield.
Yeah, plus, I mean, they made cleric toughness gear, so why can't they just make... I just don't see the point in that. Especially, you have three other armor types, all of which have toughness on. It doesn't matter if you had one more, and plus it's not like you ever have to add another one after that.
Yeah, I think that the expansion is... very easy time, obviously, to introduce a new set of armor for the mage. I don't really see any hurdles getting in their way for doing that. Plus, I also see, to be honest, I foresee some problems. If they don't put toughness on cloth gear, then you've got the mage who can do support, they can do DPS, they can do tanking, and they can do healing, and they'll be able to do it all with one gear set. There's no way Tryon's going to allow that.
Yeah, that'd be insane. That's why I think they're going to do that. It's like almost the exact same scenario as they had with Cleric, so I think they're going to follow that exact model that they did with the Cleric.
What do you think they're going to use for spells and stuff? Because we've talked off-air a bit about, you know, theorycrafting, but just imagining what these new souls are going to kind of be and stuff. Like, we're thinking one of the things that got brought up about the Rogue Soul coming up, because Daglar had hinted on the Rogue Soul, and said that the name begins with a T, and some of the common thoughts on that is that it could be like a trickster or a tactician. I'm thinking it's going to be a trickster, and we're talking about the Mage Soul, so I don't want to go too off track, but we're talking about the trickster, and I'm thinking that it could be a trickster because it could be an illusion-based soul. So what do you think they're going to do for the mage? Because we don't even know the name of the Mage Soul, but we know it's going to have a two-handed sword for a weapon. It's going to be some kind of two-handed tank. Aside from shields, I don't know, like, what element is it going to be? You know what I mean? Is it going to use pets at all or something like that? Or is it going to use illusions? Or how is it going to, you know, control the space and the mobs around it?
I almost feel like it's going to be, like, a lot of, like, instant cast spells and possibly even, like, channeling. But, like, they'll have a town where they don't get, like, interrupted while channeling or something to that effect. They're, like, there's no spell pushback. Because if they just do, like, standard melee swings, they'd be, like, so boring and lackluster. It wouldn't even be funny.
You know, I'm going to have to make a bomby mage if they actually do this. And I want to, if they do a two-handed tank soul, I'm going to want a bomby mage because I like the bomby two-handed animation better than the human one.
Yeah, the human one, I don't know. That, I mean, going back to animations really quick, I like the general idea of how they swing, but all the humans feel like they put no effort into it. They're just like, yeah, and then they, like, pull back too soon. I don't know. Like, that's just the simple little intricacies with the animation they mess up. Like Matt said earlier, like, the general concept of all the things are good, and, like, the movement, or not even necessarily the general concept, but the movement looks natural for the most part, but some of the general concepts are just goofy. Like, the human, if you watch him with a two-handed sword, when he does his vertical swing, it looks like he swings down and then pulls it back really fast before he actually, like, finishes the swing sometimes. Or he did, like, a really soft hit like pulled back.
Like it bounced off a stick of rubber, a block of rubber or something like
that.
Yeah,
it kind of recoils
back on him.
I want to see him look like he's actually putting, like, you know, like force into the swing, not just like, yeah, dink, okay.
Yeah, like follow through with the swing, like the whole way through, like swing all the way down, you know, to the ground, like the Bami does. Quickly tosses the two-handed sword from his left hand to his right hand, and then does a downward swing, and the sword actually hits the ground, so he swings through his target with full force. You know, he doesn't stop the swing midway at all.
Yeah, like Kelekonsi refers to it, but the, you know, whopping 30 minutes of enjoyment I got out of Guild Wars was all based on the fact that I played the warrior. And I got a two-hand mace, and the animations were ridiculous. Like, when I did a vertical swing, like, my guy fell, and I was playing a Norn. They're massive. They're, like, Bami size, but they're, you know, normal humans. They're just bigger. Well, they can shapeshift, but they generally look like humans when they don't shapeshift. And when he would swing his mace down, he would, like, spread his legs near the end just to get, like, extra, like, leverage, and then, like, slam down so hard, and he looked exhausted, like, after he did a swing. Like, little things like that look amazing. Though, you know, the rest of the game is terrible. I mean, what?
Jesus, Joe. Trolling the Guild Wars fans. Oh, my God. We're talking about animations and the Mage Soul and using a two-handed weapon. You know what I just thought of? It's going to be a shapeshifter. They don't have to do any animations. They don't have to worry about how it looks to see a robed mage in cloth with a two-handed sword. Because, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of cool, but it also sounds kind of... It sounds a little odd, you know what I mean, to think about a clothy... wielding a giant two-hander. So you put the two-hander in his hands, but then he shapeshifts, like, into, like, a shade or a mist or something. I don't know. Different things that he could use to generate threat stuff. I think it's going to be a shapeshifter. I really do, actually.
They can't do a shapeshifter because, number one, why would you give them the two-handed... I don't know. I think the two-handed sword is, like, the big... Not necessarily... I don't want to say gimmick, but that's, like, the big thing to it. And number two, with Trion's history of models with pets and one like that, do you have any confidence whatsoever they're not going to just give you a black twisting hat that you shapeshift into, and that's going to be what you're going to take?
Okay, well, they're redoing the models. They're redoing the pet models. They redid the wolf.
First of all,
and the boar. And those
look
really good.
Great. First of all, the wolf looks great. The boar, they just slapped armor on it. They didn't really do anything else to it. I still think it looks cool, but it's something major. The raptor still looks like shit, and the BM pet is terrible. I'm sorry. The armor's awesome. The thing still looks like a puppy, for Christ's sake, and it looks like a girl. I don't know who made that face, but it looks like a dog that you just slapped in the face, and it, like, you know, it's like crying. It's like the most feminine pet. And I don't have any problem having a girl pet, but, like, the old pet was so vicious looking, and not only did they do that, but they removed all the animations of the old pet. The old pet, while I didn't love it, its animations were sick, and, like, it's, I don't know, like, it would, like, get on the ground really low, like, ready to pounce. The one now, swats his paw, like, the most lazy animation, and the other one, he lifts his, like, whole front body up and just flops on the ground. It looks like remember the bear in WoW? When you do, like...
Yeah.
Like, when he would do, like, Mangle, he would just, like, go forward, like, this big flop.
Yep.
That's basically what it is. It's terrible looking.
I don't feel that passionate about it. I understand that it has this kind of pinkish tint to it. I understand it has a very friendly face on it.
I'm just mad because...
We're talking about the model quality, though. We're not going to see another air elemental. They're never going to do a model like that ever again.
I sure hope not.
I hope not, too. But their technology is better. Their funding is better. Everything, all of their resources are so much better now to produce such better character models.
The only thing I'm going to say, the only reason I'm so adamant about the Beastmaster pet is the only thing I really disliked about the old pet was how goddamn skinny he was, similar to the Blood Raptor that's like 10 pounds. If they would have simply put armor on it and just made it like fatter, I would love that pet. I'm not even necessarily fat, just give it like 10 pounds. Because it's like face look like just so sinister and, like, vicious. And how animated was, like, fantastic. I used to love that. I just would look at it and be like, God, just skin and bones, for Christ's sake. Give this damn thing some weight.
Well, I want to get back to the mage because I'm playing a mage now. I love the mage soul. I especially love Stormcaller, which, by the way, I've been doing PvP as a Stormcaller. chat room and Kel, and I was talking about Kel with this a long time ago about Stormcaller PvP, and I'm playing 51 Stormcaller, and I'm playing a 30-36, 30 Power Mancer, 36 Stormcaller build that I'm using in PvP right now, and I'm doing awesome with both, and I love it. So I'm really excited for this, and I'm so happy that it's the first solo. I'm happy we're defined, and that I'm playing a mage again. And Kel said in chat that he hopes it's Geomancer that uses more of the power of Earth for like shielding. And that really fits. I love it. That's awesome. I think that's a great concept, Kel. I think that's a huge possibility. And you know, they might not even do like a total shapeshifter, but like they could give the Geomancer, if that's what it is, which I think that's a great name, I think it's a great concept. They could give it like a rock form where it's like a rock armor where instead of using your two-hander, you know, this rock just like forms and like your arms become like huge rocks and you know, you have like boulders at the end and you can punch stuff with boulders on your fists or something like that. That'd be really cool. So you get like a, you know, a visible rock armor around you instead of actually like just changing form.
But I really do hope that all the souls are like really cool things. They're not just like, yeah, for the warrior, we're giving you a support soul and you just like do melee DPS, but a heal simultaneously.
Oh, dude, I think they're going all out with these. I think these new souls are going to be really exciting. I think they're going to be phenomenal. And they said that we're going to see the reveals for the other ones, for the other souls, over the next few weeks. So, you know, they said that we were going to see the major soul reveal in a couple of weeks. Last time that they streamed, it's been about 3 weeks. So a little bit behind on you know, what a couple of weeks technically would be. So I think they're using the term lightly. But going by the next few weeks, I would say anywhere between the next 3 to 5 weeks, we are going to see the reveal for every single new soul coming out.
And really quick to what Kel said about the Blood Raptor. Yeah, so I said the Blood Raptor was anorexic, similar to the original Beastmaster.
Oh, get off the Blood Raptor. Get over it.
Its face looks like a snake, and even has a snake tongue. It's retarded. I wish they would just take the raptor that's the mount and make that your pet. But anyway, sorry.
Jeez, Joe. Derailing the podcast.
That's my job, isn't it? My name is
Pretty
Matt.
Pretty much. Oh. Your name is Derail. But yeah, I'm like obsessed with this concept that Kel threw in the chat. Now we've got so many more show notes too to go through, right, but I can't get off the mage, dude. The Geomancer would be so cool, and you know,
we're
when
gonna
you look
go
at all the souls,
in so much detail when they actually reveal it, and about how you like it, but it's not a Geomancer. So let's move on.
It's gonna be a Geomancer. It's going to be a Geomancer mage tank. It's going to be. It has to be. And think about this. Hold on. Think about this. We've got mages have fire, lightning, water covered, they have life covered, they have death covered, they don't have earth. There's no earth yet. I mean, there's the elementalist, but the elementalist uses a mix of all the elements all at once. The only real earth damage that you have at all is your crystalline missiles, which is just your base filler, and that's it. So I really think it could be a Geomancer, and the concept of the element of earth fits flawlessly with the concept of a mage tank. It's perfect.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just going to say, that is our official prediction, a Geomancer. Moving on.
That is our official prediction. Kalendros did name it Geomancer. Sponsored by Kalendros. I'm saying it's going to have the Earth armor, too. It's not going to be a full shapeshift. It's going to be, like, really massive, high graphics, rock armor, and, like, rock fists. It's not actually going to hit with the two-handed swords. There's our prediction, and we'll find out if we're right on Friday.
So you to the IA. It didn't happen.
Well, the IA didn't happen. It was Scarwood Reach was supposed to go up for 1.10, right? The Scarwood Reach IA was supposed to be on the PTS right now, but it's not up yet, is it?
Yeah, it was supposed to start at 4 p.m. PST, which is 7, which was the start of the podcast, and we started a little bit late, and it still hasn't been up, and I just checked the thread literally 30 seconds ago, and there still hasn't been one single word as to what happened. And Elrar posted yesterday that sometime today, along with the IA, that the patch, you know, the PTS would get the new patch, so we would have been able to preview some new stuff 1.10, but that didn't happen either. And this kind of goes along with the, testing in general with all this stuff that they just, you know, like we talk about bumping up the time for the live stream and whatnot, but they always talk about, and Kel brought this to my attention, and I've always thought it too, it just, you know, brought to the surface that they constantly complain, you know, about their lack of testing with the rating, and then they do this. I mean, it's been literally, right now it's 5:16 PST. It's supposed to start at 4:16, or 4 rather. So it's been, we're coming up on an hour and a half, and they haven't said a word yet. Like, this happened nearly an hour and a half ago. And then they wonder why people don't show up to testing. And then we wonder why, when stuff comes out in the game, I'd say like the one flaw this game has when it comes out with content is that it's quite buggy, and we always say it's because of lack of testing, and that's because they do stuff like this, and then people don't want to test because they're completely demoralized from doing it in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you don't stick to a testing schedule, then you really can't expect people to be able to show for it, to really test it. But, I mean, how much testing do you think they really need to do on Instant Adventure? Because they've already got the core built for Instant Adventure. All they're really doing is designing the bosses and the quests, really.
Yeah, I think they just want to do a couple hours and, you know, get the bugs they didn't notice, like, you know, on a mass scale, everything's going to get brought to the surface that you can't see with, you know, just a handful of people doing it. And I think that's all they really want to do. I was actually more confused why they're not doing Scarlet Gorge. I wonder if this is insinuating that we're not going to see Scarlet Gorge, period, as IA. Like, they're just skipping over it.
I'm pretty sure that they confirmed that we were going to get, I don't remember if it was going to be Scarlet Gorge and Scarwood or if it was Scarwood and Moonshade Highlands. I'm not positive.
Well, I really don't know. I think you might actually know with the latter half. I think it might be Moonshade and Scarwood. I don't know, but we'll see. You know, hopefully, if they do postpone the testing, you know, that'll also move when they put up the notes. And when they get the notes, you would assume it has to be in the next couple of days. So, you know, get an idea, you know, what's going up, or at least a general idea, because obviously those won't be the last iteration of the notes. They'll continue to change them.
So Kel says that Scarlet Gorge was in the original list, and I do very specifically remember an official post on the forums where they did say that by the time Storm Legion came out, all of the classic zones were going to have Instant Adventure. Every single one of them.
Yeah, and that goes along with what we said earlier, that they're just going to do quality of life changes. Like, they're probably going to pump out these Instant Adventures, and that way it'll fill, you know, patch notes. It'll give people, you know, something to do, you know, possibly level. I think it almost, like, gives more people incentive to level alts, so that they have, like, almost, like, every class prepared for Storm Legion, so whatever, like, soul reveal they like the most. Like, alright, I could pick from my four characters.
I've got my class leveled for Storm Legion. It's going to be a F Geomancer.
I have mine. It's Abominable Warrior. I hope to God the warrior gets such a ridiculous overall. What
you
think?
Yeah, because let's talk about that, because you really want a tank, Joe, and I know you do, and I know that you didn't dislike warrior tanking, but you felt that there were some shortcomings in the list a little bit. So maybe, you know, like what is stopping you from really not just, you know, being able to, like, play the tank, because we know that you can deal with playing the tank and that you enjoy it at a moderate level, but what's stopping you from absolutely loving tanking in Rift?
Well, for one, right now, and this is one of the biggest hurdles, is that, like, you pretty much have to have a Reaver in your build. Like, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you have to have at least, well, 38 points if you have the Synergy Crystal, you have to have 44 points if you don't. And I don't dislike Reaver. I think it's a good concept. I think they could have done a hell of a lot more with it. I don't love the spec. I really like Paladin. I really like Warlord. Neither one, you can really invest more in, like, I think Warlord, there's a spec that's like 38 Reaver and the rest is in Warlord, so you're talking about in the 20s of points. Neither one of them can you invest more than like 30 points without being severely gimped. Paladin's probably even worse off than Warlord as is actually. That's one big thing. So like you said, like I moderately enjoy it, I don't love it. And the other thing is just the general direction of the tanking in this game. It just feels like a very old generic warrior from like older MMOs, and other MMOs have been like, I feel like they almost like more and more advanced in that they're more focused on keeping yourself alive. Like WoW right now, and I make jokes about it all the time, the one good thing they did with Cataclysm expansion, because I thought that expansion as a whole was a big disaster, was they made all the tanks very focused on both resource management, because rage in particular, you know, you see all your rage from like getting hit or hitting, you know, offensive stuff. They made it purely, almost purely, not entirely, based on you managing it. Like you have a cooldowns to pop it up. So you have to time that well, so that takes skill. And there's also like two different shield cooldowns that they're very minor cooldowns, but you have to keep them rolling and time them. It's not 100% uptime. It's probably like a, I don't know, 60-70% uptime. You have to keep them rolling and know when to time them. And I always find that more intriguing. And I always find tank classes that are more reactive and proc-based way more intriguing, which is why, to this day, as much as a big failure was Ion, the Templar in that game, it's still to this day my favorite tank, because it literally had like 5 shield procs, and some of them were so absurd. It was like literally to get a proc, I had to get a shield block, and then it was basically a chance on shield block. So shield block was already what, like 40-50%, and then you had like a 30% chance
to block, and then you had like a 10% chance to proc one ability, and then that ability had like a 5% chance to proc the ability that you actually really wanted to use.
Exactly. It was, like, so in-depth. And I don't expect a game to do that, but... And the funny part was that Ion had a very good foundation. Like, they even had this one ability, I think it was actually called Shield Block, or Shield Wall. And your character literally would just stand so you'd raise your shield, so when you knew a boss was going to do, like, a ridiculous hit, you would click it, and you'd basically be, like, almost in a stance. You got to hold the shield up, and you can only hold it for, like, 10 seconds or something. And so I would do that, and, like, little things like that. And even though the shield procs were mostly offensive, that was, like, probably the one shortcoming that Ion did, they didn't make any of the shield procs defensive, like give me health or anything to that effect. They were mostly just damage and high threat. They still had a really good general idea of being reactive and, you know, procs. And I love when tanks are extremely shield reliant. In Rift, I feel like my shield is an ornament I hold on my side. You know, like it serves, you know, obviously it blocks stuff, but there's almost no interaction with it with any of the abilities. And I hate that.
You don't like when you have like 60%, 70% block chance and your character is, like, stuck in, like, a freeze animation with the shield in front of him and on here. It's like, tink, 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 tink.
Yeah, it's funny, actually.
I love that sound.
I actually like the animations for most of the characters, especially the Bami when they get hit with a shield on. But like I said, it's just like something I hold on my side. There's no interaction with the exception of like interrupting, because I think my interrupt is technically when I'm a tank, I actually use my shield. I think it's like a shield bash. But beyond that, there's like no shield interaction, and like, that is always what I want. Like, and Matt can tell you how many MMOs we've played, and it always boils down to that I gravitate towards the most generic warrior, or, you know, very original warrior, the one that's, you know, heavy armor and a shield. And the Rift Warrior doesn't really, the last three things I mentioned, you know, the reactive stuff, the shield-oriented stuff, and the resource manager and all that, like, it doesn't have any of that right now. And I hope it goes in that direction. I don't expect, like, dramatic changes in expansion, but I hope to see, like, a change in direction, basically.
So let's go down the list with the, what from your most favorite to your least favorite for tanking?
Well, Templar, WoW Warrior, WoW Druid.
I meant Rift Souls. Your favorite tanking Rift Soul right now and your least favorite tanking Rift Soul right now.
Oh, God, I'm such an ass.
Not Templar.
It's funny, it's hard to answer this because I always gravitate towards Warrior, and I actually like the DPS Souls to an extent. And it's also hard to gauge, like, if there was more viable specs in the expansion, like if deeper into Rift Blade and more Paragon specs, you know, stuff like that, and then more the Tank Souls in particular, like that, more so than anything else, were all more viable. Even if they stay in the same current direction they are now, they don't necessarily get reactive or based on resource management or cooldown management, I still would probably still pick the Warrior because I would like the versatility of numerous specs. And I do like the Paladin and the Warlord to an extent, even without, you know, the aforementioned thing I was saying before. I like the Rogue. It would probably be Warrior, and then probably Cleric, honestly, because as much as I like playing the Rogue earlier, I like Marksman, Ranger. Saboteur was okay. I thought it was pretty fun. But I never was a huge fan of Melee Rogue in any game. And Rift Stalker is kind of blah. It's like, whatever. You know, I like the concept of, like, teleporting and stuff, but I really feel like they neutered that class, quite frankly.
Well, like, teleporting is really fun when you actually get to change position. You know, if there's more reason, like mobs that were ranged and you couldn't budge them at all or something, so you would have to, like, teleport between, like, you know, your melee group of mobs and the ranged group of mobs back and forth to try to keep threat on both or something would be a lot of fun. But you don't have to do that because you can line of sight them to pull them back. And once you get everything all together, you know, the initial pull as Rift Stalker is a lot of fun. But the teleporting gimmick or the teleporting part of the Rift Stalker, you do a lot of teleporting in place once you have everything positioned where you want it, which is, I think,
yeah,
is what
exactly.
Kind of
yeah,
dulls
it loses its allure. Yeah. Yeah, right. I think if someone was, like, new to the game and they did, like, experts and they were teleporting everywhere and they went to a raid environment and, you know, like you just said, started teleporting in place, it would lose so much of its allure because you'd be like, wow, really, this is all it boils down to.
So I was asking what your favorite tanking souls were in Rift right now, because with the expansion coming up and the new soul reveals, you know, coming up over the course of the next month, which soul, like, whenever we talk about the new souls, you talk about, you know, how you're really, really curious what they're going to do with the current souls. And so with how you're kind of, you know, so-and-so on the tanking souls, which soul would you want to see, like, revamped first for the tanking thing and kind of, like, you know, maybe a little bit about how would you tweak it?
Probably Warlord, that or Paladin, because they're both, you know, like, very standard things you'd see in other MMOs in terms of, you know, how they're built. But they're just, I don't know, like, they don't do anything else. You know, they're kind of like, as you said, they're very standard. Also, that and neither one of them are very viable right now. So if they were actually viable, that alone would, you know, make my interest in Warrior a hell of a lot higher than it is right now. To Warlord, I actually think Warlord doesn't need much work because it actually has a lot of cool cooldowns and, like, neat things that are new. But like I said, and we talk about this all the time, like 51 points into, or even 44 points into that 2 years, completely and utterly useless because it's not viable. The only thing I would probably do is maybe change some of the routes, but that's simply because that's why it's not viable. It's because the 51 point talent is like, I forgot exactly what it does. It's a cool gimmick, but it, you know, once you get past, I believe it's like 27 or 20, maybe 26 points in that tree, you're basically spending points for almost no gain. And that's pretty much the same problem with Paladin. So if I would actually keep Warlord a lot how it is. I would just change the routes, you know, put more like viable, like passive cooldowns and one like that. And Paladin, I really think should be like the ultimate shield spec. Like it's everything is reliant on your shield. Like it should be pure shield procs. And that's why I want it to be. And that's what I would play, period. Cause I would just absolutely adore that. Cause of all the, I mean, Reaver obviously wouldn't be a shield spec. And I don't think Warlord should be either. Warlord has its own niche right now, which just isn't viable. You know what I mean? They just have to fix the routes.
Well, Warlord really, right now, is it looks like the original concept for it, at least, is kind of like right down your alley, you know, right down your road for what you're looking for in a tank is kind of managing cooldowns, managing short-term buffs, and managing all these little things that can buff your group or, you know, or active blocking mechanics and stuff like that. And the Warlord has a lot of that, a lot of finishers that do buffs and just kind of passively generate threat, but they're just buffing and kind of changing the playing field a bit. There's a lot of stuff to keep up like that, but it's kind of missing out on a lot of the more tanky stat-oriented, the stat buffing and block and worthwhile passives.
Exactly, yeah. Like, they wouldn't have, like I said, that spec, probably more so than any other spec in terms of tanking things for the Warrior, wouldn't need much work. They would just have to make, I mean, especially if they have to redo the routes in order to make the tree as a whole more viable, they could just add those things. Because I actually enjoyed the spec, it's just it's not very viable. I always wound up doing, like, 22 points or something, like, into it. I forgot the name of the one cooldown, but it basically does, like, a passive, like, damage reduction for your entire party. And that's, like, when you do, like, points into Reaver, that's a really good, you know, side tree to go into. Yep. So that tree doesn't need much work. It really doesn't. It just, they need the roots to be changed so the tree as a whole is viable. Paladin, like I said, I think they should just make that just so shield-oriented. So Paladin is probably the one I would pick that I want to get changed. And I want, WoW basically has like this one cooldown that I really like. It's like a shield thing. It basically increases your block for like 30 seconds or so. I've got the exact name. I think it's actually might be called Shield Block, which is kind of dull, but who cares with the name. And you basically have to rotate, and you have to know when to rotate it, because I think it has like a 30-second or 1 minute cooldown, but it lasts for, I think it's a minute cooldown, but it lasts 30 seconds. You have to know when to rotate it, and you have to basically like keep it, it's like 50% uptime. And you have to know when to do it, you have to know like time when the boss is a big attack and stuff like that. I would love like little tiny things like that. So Paladin would definitely be my choice. And Reaver, like I said, I like the general concept of the dots and spreading the diseases, but I feel like they could go a couple steps further. They make more finishers based off the dots. And as it stands now, I just feel like they basically were like, okay, instead of hitting 1, 2, 3, 4, which are just straight up attacks, I'm hitting 1, 2, 3, 4, and those are dots instead. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't do, like, much effort. It was like, you click this, and you click a dot, and it spreads. And it's like, okay.
So, you know, a lot of the souls in Rift right now, I think, it's more prominent for some callings than other ones, but a lot of them have those, you know, reveal, like the Beastmaster, for example, like reveal stealth around you, something that you never really use. But you have to put points somewhere in order to get the root, to unlock the root-based abilities. So, my question to you is, do you think that they should, like, prune the trees, basically, and just get rid of stuff like the little niche things? Like, maybe in this situation you might use it, because, I mean, the reality of it is that if you want to play a soul as your main soul in the spec, the key soul in the spec, such as a Warlord or a Beastmaster or anything else, you're going to have to invest a lot of points into it. Generally, anywhere between 38 or 40-plus points go into your main soul, which means that a lot of times you end up picking up a lot of those kind of like filler abilities there, those filler passives.
Yeah, I mean, me and you had this conversation the other day, like what WoW did in Cataclysm, where they pruned all the stuff and they, you know, lowered the points. They went back to like what it was in Vanilla, where there was like 31 point talent trees. And I would really like that, to be honest. I mean, no, I mean, I wouldn't like 31-point talent chase. I'm obviously not. I want them to get rid of some of them, though, because, I mean, I feel like there's most trees you put 31 points in and then, you know, to get your top talent. And then maybe 10 more points are worthwhile, so you get to 40, 41 points. And then there's, like, 10-point gap where it's just stuff you're not using. And it's not that I doubt Tryon can fill those in with more useful stuff. I doubt anyone to do it because I just feel like you can, especially if they're adding more points and adding more, you know, talents into the tree and Stormwind. I just feel like you're eventually going to hit this point where you're going to have to put more and more useful stuff into the tree. And I'm no way saying that I want them to go into the mob direction where it's like, hey, I don't have talent trees. I just think that they have to, they could reduce them to an extent, like maybe take like 10 points out of the roots or something like that. You know, a small little thing like that. That's about it.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've thought about it a little bit, and I wonder if they're going to do a little bit of pruning, even in, like, the roots. Like stuff like track fire creatures or track earth creatures. Nobody uses it. Nobody cares. And there's enough buffs on
time,
the damn
dude.
List. Oh, yeah? Do you use, like track earth creatures to track geomancers because they're running rampant everywhere?
Hey, man. I think it's very helpful.
So, you know, they could get rid of that, and they could put a more useful ability in its place. And I think there are several abilities not quite as useless as the track elements abilities. But there are several abilities that they could just straight up remove and replace with better things, you know what I mean? And then keep it so that 51 points is still the ideal. You know, that's still the absolute max, but prune everything else, and then the additional soul points we get go into more hybriding.
Exactly. I think that's what they should do. Because I think if you ask for this expansion, you know, let's say they raise it to 61 points. What are you going to do for the next expansion? You're going to do 71? It's going to get so ridiculous. You're going to have so many useless talents, like increase your stealth detection while moving.
Yeah, and that's the real danger with a system like Rift has for the souls, is as you continue to add more and more soul points, you start to make it like more and more likely that you could fill like two entire souls and be playing like a combination of two classes at the same time. So I think they might do that. I think it's much more realistic to keep it where 51 points is the maximum for a soul. And then as you introduce, you know, more points, then you allow a little bit more hybriding. But like, for example, 2 years from now, when they do their second expansion, then they might go from 51 points to 61 points. And if you do it like every other expansion like that, it won't get too ridiculous as long as you make it worth it to spend the majority of your points in the primary soul. You know, so if there was a 71 point root ability, that's fine as long as it's the ideal build is to go 71 points into that soul, then it won't be that big a deal.
I'm pretty much okay as long as there's as many soul points as there are levels. Like, if it ever gets to the point where it's like, you're level 60, but there's 50 points, that's retarded. Because that means when you're leveling, you're going to go some levels without getting points. But even if there was 60 levels and 60 points, that'd be like my minimum, like, barrier. Like, I wouldn't go below that. Because at the very least, you're getting 1 point per level, and that's good enough. Obviously, that's not, like, optimum to me, but, you know what I'm saying? That'd be like my cutting off point.
Yep. And I agree with Icehole, too. A lot of the different souls, they have the really good stuff extremely low in their souls. And they did something smart when they changed back when, I think it was 1.6 or 1.7, I forget which one, it was 1.6 or 1.7, where they changed how fell blades worked so that the fell blades and the vampiric munitions for the rogue would also leech health. And they put the vampiric munitions, I think, only works on ranged abilities, or they just put it deeper in. And fell blades is 16 points in. So if you want to go 51 points into a soul, you can't have fell blades and have a 51 point, which was good. But 16 points is still pretty low for something that's a 50% heal debuff and a 50% health leech.
They're going to have to, just answer, Kel, they're going to have to do 51 points, though, Kel, because as me and Matt have been talking, you know, ad nauseum for the past months, on and off, if you continue to encourage hybrids, you're going to stay with the exact same scenario we have now, where every soul has, like, or every calling, I should say, has, like, one or two DPS alternatives, you know, one tank, you know what I mean? Like, such limited options. If you make it, I mean, that's what happened with WoW, too. I talked about earlier with the homogenizing of tanks. It's the same thing with the specs, because there is, if you homogenize the specs and make them more, like, streamlined, where everyone has to go, you know, at least 31, 51, whatever the number is, into a spec, more will be viable. And if I have to trade off hybriding for 5 or 6 options, hell, maybe 8 if all 8 are viable. Am I calling? I'd rather that. I don't think there's even you can even debate me on that. I think overwhelming majority would do that trade-off.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely on board.
Rift Overcast is recorded live every Wednesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific Time on our Twitch TV channel, twitch.tv/RiftOvercast. Recordings are aired every Friday each week on iTunes via the iTunes Store, on Stitcher Radio at stitcher.com, on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/RiftOvercast, and on our website, riftovercast.blogspot.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/RiftOvercast and on Twitter at RiftOvercast for all the latest news and updates regarding the show. You can also contact us via email at riftovercast@gmail.com. We're always looking for new guests to come on the show and be a part of Community Boys. If there is any area of Rift that you have extensive experience in or are especially passionate about, be sure to contact us with a little information about yourself and your desired topics. Also, keep an eye on our website, Facebook, and Twitter for details regarding some upcoming giveaways. And as always, we want to hear your opinions on both the game and the show, so leave us a comment below or on any of the aforementioned sites, and we will see you next week.